Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday
on The Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerdish, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
I think we're live,
guys.
We are live.
Are we?
Yeah, hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday, actually Friday. We're recording on Friday live. I'm Dave Dufour. That's Mo DeKeel. That's Seth Partnow. And this is Nerdish, She Wrote. Welcome. What's up, guys?
I wish Seth had a different move than mine after I waved. I wish he had done something. Just completely copied me. Didn't really come up with anything original there, Seth.
Well, you just kind of sprung it on me. I didn't have time to work on my, you know, my intro move.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
We're live now,
well,
Dave.
Well, guys, nothing big happening in the NBA. You know, it's just the playoffs. No big deal.
I thought it was like the Premier League. Thought the standings was the championship and that was it. We're done?
3 points for a win. What have you guys thought about the play-in game so far, you know, before we jump into the Eastern Conference playoffs?
It's fun. It's fun. I mean, the games may not have been all that great. I mean, the Lakers-Warriors game was insane, right? I think we can all agree about that. But like, and even Memphis-San Antonio was a good game. But yeah, the Eastern Conference, not so great. Had a few blowouts, but it's been great. Like, there's never going to be a guarantee we're going to get good games out of this.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't – there are actually more blowouts in the playoffs than in the regular season anyway. So it's not terribly surprising that some of these games have been, you know, beatdowns because, you know, your season's on the line, so your starters will play even if you're up 25. So it's not terribly surprising. It is how meekly the Pacers went out last night was a little bit surprising, but oh well.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors-Lakers game was pretty awesome. I mean, that's just dumb luck for the league, and yeah, it was a lot of fun.
How often are we going to have two former MVPs? One that's going to finish in the top three be in the playing game.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible luck there. All right, well, let's jump into the playoffs because that's why we're here, and it's what we've really all been waiting for. So the first series, I guess we're going to talk about is, to me, the most intriguing series, guys, and you know I'm very serious about this because I love the Washington Wizards so much, and I just believe in this team. Philly is -1,000 to win this series over at BetMGM. The Wizards are +650. Joel Embiid is just unguardable for the Wizards, I think, and Bradley Beal's not healthy, so this one's probably a sweep. That's how I feel. What about you guys? I mean, I just don't see any chance that the Wizards can even steal a game.
Frankly, the most interesting part of this series is if at any point the Wizards stop starting Alex Len and actually start, you know, their best center. Actually start Daniel Gafford at one point this series. I think that's the biggest intrigue that this series holds for me. And I agree. I think it's a sweep. I think it's a comfortable Philly win.
I think I'm going to put all my money on Washington so I can actually buy this house. That is the background, by the way, folks. I do not actually have this house. It was in the chat. I had to bring it. This is not my actual house. No, Washington doesn't have much of a chance. I think the problems for Washington is their bigs aren't the type of bigs you'd want to go at Embiid or make him have to actually defend. Like posting up Robin Lopez versus Joel Embiid, Philly's okay with that. It's not so they don't have anybody that's going to spread the floor and make Embiid have to get out on the perimeter and worry about that. So I think this is going to be maybe excitement here and there, but I think it's going to be a pretty easy series for Sixers.
How about Ben Simmons? Do you guys think that this is a series that Ben Simmons can excel in, or do you feel like it's such a nothing series that we can't take anything away from it?
This is going to be a good series for him in the sense of like he's going to have to either guard Russell Westbrook or Bradley Beal, probably Bradley Beal to start. And also Wizards are so banged up. I think it's kind of an issue too, but you know, for him, it'll be a good way to get him going in the defensive juices situation and watch kind of, you almost want him to attack the way Russell Westbrook does aggressively. And I think you kind of hope maybe he sees Westbrook do it a few times and goes like, oh, I should probably do that a little more.
Yeah, that's Westbrook was bad the other day. And I mean, Seth, this is a guy that we've been talking about down the stretch. They don't make the playoffs if Russ didn't play as well as he did down the stretch. I mean, he really was great for them. And we saw that he was pretty awful in that game against Boston. He's going to have to show up in a way that, I mean, he obviously didn't in that game, but I just don't know if he can be efficient enough to matter in a series against Philly. Their defense is just so good.
Yeah. And I think that the thing that's really going to be hurtful there is he's going to try to get to the basket. He's going to get there. He's going to throw up some wild shots. And for Philly, who is not a great half court offensive team, like those turning into fast breaks the other way is just going to be, you know, Russ is a really interesting player because he brings a lot to the table, but takes a lot off the table. And the things he takes off the table are going to be sort of almost exacerbated given how important getting those easy buckets in transition is going to be to Philly.
Yeah. So you guys with me on the sweep? Is that kind of where we're at?
Maybe they get a game, but I don't know if it's going to be anything that's too threatening for Philly.
If Beal was healthy, I could see him like him going for 45 and them stealing one. But with him, you know, banged up, and I frankly wouldn't be especially surprised if he ends up exiting the series early, because you know that's sort of what happens with hamstrings, is they're fine until they're not.
And if they go down 3-0, there's just no point in playing that game and risking it. I want to give him some credit for playing through this, because this is what, I mean, if you want to make the playoffs and you're on a team that doesn't have a ton of talent, this is what it takes. Your stars have to be able to do this and play through a hamstring. And that's tough as nails. And it honestly, like, makes me think more of him as a player because he wants to do this so badly. So it's kind of a bummer. And I just don't see how they can steal a game with Beal, you know, dealing with this hamstring issue at all. All right, so we move on to the next series. I think that we've
I think we're good. See you guys in three minutes.
Well, all right, so this one's is slightly more interesting and obviously not as interesting as it could have been, you know, maybe if we would have thought we would have gotten this series 2 months ago. You know, Jaylen Brown is out, so Boston really going into this series against Brooklyn, they're hurting. We already knew that they were hurting without Gordon Hayward all year. Like, that was a guy that they missed big time right away. We saw it. They sort of found their way a little bit with Jaylen Brown picking up more of an offensive load. They've never figured out their center rotation. And right now, to me, their best center, Robert Williams, is dealing with this turf toe issue. So, you know, they surprised me with that game against the Wizards. And I thought Jason Tatum was spectacular. But once again, we're dealing with a talent disparity. And Mo, I just don't know that Boston has the bodies to be able to hang with Brooklyn.
No, and you know what? Even when they've been healthy, you know, they weren't able to hang with Brooklyn all that much this season. I think it's become a problem for them. It's tough. Jason Tatum's going to have to be really looking not just like an MVP type candidate, but he has to look like an MVP for them to really win games in this series and threaten the Nets. It's going to be a very tough series. And, you know, look, even in the playing game they won, they didn't get a great game from everybody else. It was Tatum going for 50, Walker dropping, I think, around 22. And then their third best scorer was Tristan Thompson with 12 points. That's not going to get it done against the Nets.
I mean, Seth, before we started recording, you said that for Boston to even steal a game, they're going to need Jason Tatum to play like a top three player in the league. What does Kemba Walker need to play like for them to steal a game?
I mean, he certainly needs to, you know, win the battle with Kyrie. But the hard part for them is who are the other guys who, okay, one of those guys gets it going and Brooklyn starts rolling, you know, more coverage towards them. Who are the other guys on Boston who are going to be able to make shots to, you know, take advantage of that? And that's, I mean, that's really where it, you know, as much as the star power favors Brooklyn, like there's not even, you know, there's not even a Landry Shamet on the Celtics who can get hot and you know, swing a game by banging a bunch of threes.
I wouldn't put it past too many guys. It would be a collective thing for Boston. It wouldn't just be one guy. But if you look at the stats for the last 15 games, and here it is, me giving stats to Seth, which is always going to be awkward because 2 minutes later he goes like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Get out of my domain. You know, Fournier in the last 15 games shooting almost 46% from three on six attempts. You know, Aaron Nesmith, listen, Boston fans, y'all need to chill out, man. Like, just having a couple of weeks is not taking the leap, right? Like, a couple of good weeks is great, but not necessarily a leap. We need to see it in a longer view. But good run for him, 45% from three, just under three attempts a game. It's going to be – look, Kemba's shooting lights out, but that's one of the guys we think if he gets hot, the coverage has got to roll. It's – where it gets worrisome is Marcus Smart, right? Because he's going to think he's hot. And he might think he's hot for the last 15 games. He's only shot 24% over the last 16 games on six attempts. Like, it's almost at a certain point, it's like, this is kind of scary. But I think they have some guys that can get it going. But it's going to be very interesting in that it's a collective group. I don't think it'll be one guy that turns the tide in that sense.
I'm glad you brought up Fournier because part of the reason I wasn't super wild about that trade for Boston is he's a guy who has over his career been pretty poor in the playoffs. Now, some of that is, you know, he's been perhaps exposed as like a spotter three too high in the Magic's sort of pecking order. But with Jaylen Brown out, he's a spotter three too high in the Celtics pecking order. So I think we're going to see kind of more of the same there.
Yeah, I'm with you. What about Brooklyn? Do you guys feel like there are going to be any chemistry issues? I mean, we didn't see the big three play together all that much. And maybe game one, there's a little bit of, you know, a disconnect and Boston can steal one there. Like Tatum goes nuts and Kemba has a great game. And all of a sudden, maybe we see some cracks in Brooklyn. Any chance of that whatsoever?
I don't think.
I mean, always a chance, but unlikely.
I'm guessing, chemistry. Yeah. Their off-court chemistry seems perfectly fine to me. You know, it's not a situation where that was a concern. Like last year with the Clippers, I was like, yo, their off-court chemistry is not good. This one feels fine. Yeah. I'm worried a little bit about their on-court chemistry. And the thing about this series that won't challenge them, there's no big man. Like that's the problem for the Nets that makes things difficult for them. You know, they're not a great rebounding team and things like that. But I don't feel like Boston's going to hurt them that much in that respect. And I think that's the issue there with this series. So even if they have a couple of issues, I just don't think their chemistry. I'm not worried about their chemistry yet.
I think the encouraging thing for Brooklyn is how almost seamless it was in the few games they played right after acquiring Harden. Like it seemed like their three guys sort of fell naturally into roles where, okay, Kyrie is going to like look to get buckets for the first three quarters. KD is going to, you know, I don't want to say float around, but going to, you know, be opportunistic and find his spots. And Harden for the first, you know, 36, 40 minutes of the game is going to set everybody up. And then, you know, not have a lot of energies to, if he needs to take over down the stretch, do so. And that's how they played for the first, you know, until they started to get the, you know, the health and safety protocols and all the injuries going. That's kind of how they fit together. So I'm not super worried about the on-court either. And frankly, like in a series where I don't think Boston has really much equity to win four games, I don't even think losing a game early is the worst thing for Brooklyn, just to get them, you know, just get them a couple reps. I think that's not a bad thing for a team that just hasn't played together a lot, really, with their with the lineups they're going to want to put on the court at important times in later in the playoffs.
Well, that leads to a really good question from the chat over on YouTube from Noah. Should Brooklyn use a game or two of this Boston series to experiment? I actually don't think that that's a bad idea. I mean, I know it's the playoffs and this is a professional basketball team, but you've got such a talent gap between these two teams that maybe they should try out some of the stuff that they didn't have time to do during the regular season with their three stars. What do you think, Mo?
No, I mean, it's something that this is all new for them. It's an experiment as they're going through the playoffs. They've only had eight games together with these three guys. Like, there's still things they got to figure out. So, you know, Steve Nash has his work cut out of him. That would be a little bit awkward. Has his work cut out for him
even
in this instance, just because I think, you know, he's got to figure out what's going to work and what's not. And they're going to have to pivot real quickly if something's not working. You don't have the runway that you would have had in the regular season where you could experiment. And, you know, so you're going to see some interesting things in this series, maybe some interesting lineups and stuff that we might be able to look at going like they're looking ahead to the next series. But you also do got to be careful and play the opponent in front of you.
I mean, I think Mo said it best. Is it experimenting or is it just they haven't played their three guys and Nick Claxton together very much? They haven't played their three guys and Blake Griffin together so much. Like, you know, we're gonna see lineups where it's like, you know, Kyrie, KD, Harden, Bruce Brown, Nick Claxton. That's not a group that's played a lot together. But that is gonna be one of their best lineups in the going down the stretch of the playoffs, or maybe even going even smaller than that and having like Joe Harris in for Claxton. Like, those are lineups that they're going to have to play, and they just haven't had a chance to get to them. So is it experimenting or is it just, you know, it's unusual how little a team as good as they are has had their kind of full complement of players together. So they're forced to throw it together on the fly.
This might be more of a bigger picture question for you guys, but given that we've actually seen Brooklyn be able to rise to the occasion in crunch time with their defense, I mean, they've got another gear defensively, and we've seen it. You guys seen enough that you feel like you can trust them for this full playoff run? I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves thinking about the playoffs down the line, but, you know, I know the Brooklyn defense has kind of been the one thing that we all point out as being a potential issue in the playoffs. Do you guys still feel that way at this point?
Yes, I am so worried about Brooklyn's defense. The biggest thing is frankly, like, we haven't seen enough of KD from just a physical standpoint of being able to dial it back up to the defensive heights he hit, you know, especially in his kind of later days in Oklahoma City, where he was like the best offensive player on the floor. And for big stretches of games was the best defensive player on the floor too. I don't know if he physically has that anymore, you know, both from his age, from coming off the Achilles, from, you know, being banged up and, you know, with a bunch of little things all season. So that's the biggest question that I think has yet to be answered at all for Brooklyn defensively.
Yeah, there's still lots we got to figure out for them defensively. And there's still stuff, again, this goes back to Nash having to figure out what is it. You know, they switch everything right now. Okay, that might work in this Boston series, but will that work in the next one? They don't know what's plan B, you know, and I think that's why, you know, their defense is always going to be a concern. And, you know, it's interesting you say, like, in crunch time, they tend to show up. We don't know if it's going to show up with those three, because we've rarely seen those three on the court together in crunch time. The one game that just off the top of my head that comes to mind was their loss to Washington early in the year in crunch time, you know, and they didn't get enough stops there. The two games against Milwaukee, even though it was out without Harden, they couldn't come up with enough stops down the stretch of those games. So, you know, I think those are going to be the question marks for them throughout the entire playoffs.
Yeah. All right. Prediction time, guys. Brooklyn, Boston. I'm going to say Brooklyn in a sweep. Maybe if Tatum goes off, Boston can steal a game. And I'm bummed out about it because I think this could have been a fun series had they been healthy and if Boston had figured out their center rotation. Seth, who you got?
I mean, I think I'm going to go Nets in five because, you know, Tatum will probably get a game in the same way we said that if Beal was healthy, Tatum is healthy and we've just seen him, you know, get there. So I think they get one, but it's the proverbial gentleman sweep.
Mo? Sweep. I don't think they get a game as good, even if I think Tatum's going to go off for a game, maybe even go off the entire series, but there's just not much behind them. I don't trust Kemba Walker to be able to bring it for seven game series or even more than two or three games in a series. This series, sweep.
All right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Well, this might be the biggest series of the first round in the East, guys. And Seth, I know this one strikes a little close to home, but the Bucks and the Heat, a rematch, 3-6. The Bucks over at BetMGM are -275 as favorites to win this series. And guys, I am not sure what teams people have been watching this year, but it's pretty obvious to me that a lot of people who are picking the Heat in this series have not watched the Heat or the Bucks. Mo, am I crazy here, or have the Heat just kind of not been good this year? And a lot of injuries, but still, even when they've been healthy, there are a lot of stuff to worry about.
It's not that they've not been good. They've just been very up and down, you know, and there's for several reasons. COVID, injuries, all sorts of different issues throughout the entire regular season. But again, kind of they're sort of playing pretty well right now, peaking a bit. You know, last 15 games, even though Hero missed, and I'm trying to do math in my head, seven. You know, he's shooting 52% and looks like he's playing well. Dragic getting 13 games out of him in the last 15 has got to be comforting and confident in that sense. I think this is going to be closer than you're giving it credit for, Dave. But I also think in the sense of it, too, is the Bucks had a chance to get out of this matchup. You know, they had a chance to really just be like, we're going to rest our guys against Miami that last weekend. They won for it, and I think it's more of a sign of like, no, we want them. We're going after it, and I'm excited to see it. And I think this is going to be a big series for the Bucks.
Seth, do you think that this Miami team is the same as the one that made the finals run last year? I mean, obviously personnel wise it's different, but I would argue even on the court the way they play is slightly different.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the two biggest things is Bubble Dragic is something that got talked about a lot last year. The thing is he didn't – the main thing was he just played more. They were kind of saving him, and he just hasn't been nearly as effective at any point this year as he was during the regular season last year. So does he still have that gear to go to? I don't know. And then I think that the switch from Jay Crowder to Trevor Ariza, I think that – I mean, they're probably players of similar ability, but I think from this matchup standpoint – the fact that Crowder is just like stouter than Ariza really matters a lot against Milwaukee, because Miami doesn't have a lot of guys who can sort of take that first hit from Giannis when he starts to get downhill. And you know, Crowder was just one more that could do it. And, you know, I wrote about this with Eric Name earlier this week. This is another area where Drew Holiday being more of a threat than Eric Bledsoe really shows up, because you could hide someone on Bledsoe last year, whereas, you know, who is you're not going to be able to do that on Holiday as much. And that's one more guy who has to, you know, if Jimmy Butler is guarding, you know, Holiday or Chris Middleton, that's one of kind of the two strong guys on Miami that isn't available to stay in Giannis's way.
And yeah, and Miami's not hitting those contested threes like they were doing in the bubble either, Mo. And that was creating so much offense for them, because, I mean, it was causing the defense to pick up those shooters even earlier. And I think without that threat, it's just that like, how are they going to score?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to come down to, are they going to make shots? It's basically going to be that situation for them. But I kind of want to go back a little bit, Dave. And the big thing for Miami in the series last year was their ability to build that wall, right? You know, against Giannis. But I think the Bucks have done a good job this year kind of using that dunker spot. And you'll see it where guys like Robin Lopez will get to the dunker spot. Excuse me. Wrong team. It'd be really interesting if Robin Lopez got to the dunker spot for the Bucks and not Brooke. But if Brooke Lopez gets to, you know, Brooke will do a good job of getting down there. Even times where it's Dante DiVincenzo getting down to the dunker spot, like they do a good job of filling that when teams are walling up on Giannis, because then it becomes a situation of that wall crumbles because either a guy goes with him or Giannis makes the pass and that guy has a layup. And I think that's going to be a very interesting thing to see how Miami deals with that defense. In terms of how they're going to score offensively, it's going to come down to, can they get the dribble penetration to get the drive and kick situations? I think teams are more aware of Duncan Robinson this year than last year. They know they got to be locking trail on him coming off pin downs and being into his body and things like that. It'll be interesting to see how many more open looks he gets in this playoffs compared to last. Just on that sense of the scouting report being out there on him. And if Hero struggles, they're gonna have issues, and it's gonna just come down to Dragic and Jimmy and Bam making plays.
Let's talk about some of the changes that Milwaukee's made this year, Seth. I mean, you know, Mo mentioned getting guys into the dunker spot, which is just, you know, old school basic basketball. And it seems like it shouldn't be such a big deal for them, but it really is. I mean, they've essentially created a way that if they're walling up against Giannis, they can still involve him without putting the ball in his hands. And that's kind of what they've been missing in the playoffs the last couple of years.
Yeah. And again, I think that's another area where Holiday's is helpful, is that you have another guy you can give the ball to, as, you know, we have some, a guest in the background there. Say hi to Bruce.
I just want the cat. I just want the cat to jump on you from the harp. That's all, but that's it.
So I think that's sort of bit of versatility, even though they don't have quite the depth of talent, they're in their top kind of three, four guys. They have more places where they can kind of start their offense than they necessarily had a year ago. I want to go back to Brook Lopez, by the way, because this is going to be an interesting swing part of the series, especially if Miami is going to have Bam guard Giannis, which means that a smaller guy is going to be on Brook Lopez. Where does he end up in the offense if they have a smaller guy on him? That's the thing I'm going to be really interested about. If he's being guarded by Ariza or someone like that, and he's spaced out to the corner, that's a problem. If they see that matchup and they, you know, I don't know if he at this point in his career is someone you just stick on the block and stick his hand up and throw him the ball and go to work. But if he, you know, rolls to the basket to either offensive rebound or a quick duck in or something like that, like that's what I'm looking for them to do, to really, you know, exploit the fact that, yeah, he can shoot, but he's also a very nimble 7 foot, 200 and what do we call it? 75. And use that bulk to their advantage, play some bully ball.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And I would go for those post ups when he's got the mismatch, because he's good there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the just while you were talking, pulled up his synergy numbers, and Lopez's post ups, you know, it's 0.99 points per possession on a post up. Not a lot. Very, very, very small sample size in it being just 90 post-ups. But I think that's something that can happen. But I think that's also where we haven't really even talked about it. That's where PJ Tucker comes into play too. You know, and then it's okay, we're going to put PJ out there. And if they're going to put, if they're going to have Trevor Ariza float in off of both of those guys in the corner, go have them set a screen. You know what I mean? Just have them go get in the action and make it so that Ariza can't float or whoever they want to hide on those guys. I think that's going to be the things we got to watch for in that series. What is, how do they, how do the Heat defend that? And how does the Bucks counter that? And of course, now when we get to counters, comes to the big question, well, is will Bud counter?
Well, here's a question that I think we could take as a counter from Adam Goatmuller in the YouTube chat. Can the Bucks play Giannis at the five against the Heat? I think, you know, certainly we should expect to see plenty of Giannis at the five against the Heat. That just makes sense. But the lineups that they can run out there, they don't really drop off defensively. I mean, you know, you have PJ Tucker and Dante DiVincenzo with the Milwaukee big three. And that's still a really good defensive lineup, especially with Giannis at the five. And it just makes him a little bit more flexible to me. What about you guys? What do you, how do you feel about it?
I don't think Bam is a particularly bad matchup for Giannis as a five. Like for, he's a wonderful range of talents, but his biggest lack, I guess, is his ability to just take the ball and score in a, like an isolation or a post-up situation. So the worry, one of the big worries about like Giannis at the five is foul trouble. And I don't think Bam is quite the matchup. Now, you know, looking ahead to, you know, a later series, like would I want to spend a lot of time with Giannis guarding Joel Embiid? No, but like, I don't think the matchup is as dangerous with Bam as it would be from some other teams.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I don't. I'm not as worried, you know, in that sense. And yeah, you know, everything Seth said. I mean, he took everything. The, you know, there's nothing else left
pretty
to
much,
say.
Pretty
like,
much,
he gave
you know,
me no meat on the bone. So thanks, Seth. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, I guess we're at prediction time here for this series. And guys, I have strong feelings about this series. I think the Bucks have been slept on all year. I think Giannis has been completely overlooked all year. I think the Bucks are better than their record. I think they're the best team in the East. I'm taking them in five in this series.
Okay.
Fellas,
I like that.
I'm going to honor.
No, I just like that Dave didn't really go all the way. If you were really gutsy, you'd call for the sweep. If you were really that brave.
Listen, I have too much respect for the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler in particular to pick a sweep. But I do think that Milwaukee, there's a talent gap. Milwaukee has it.
But not so much respect that you think they're going to win more than one game. Right.
So just and I wouldn't, by the way, I wouldn't pay no damn $20 for any coffee. I don't care where it's from. So, you know, shots. Keep that coffee.
Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, boy.
All right, guys, who you got? I know you got the Bucks.
Well, I've been on the Bucks bandwagon all year. And every time Dave brings up, oh, we've slept on them. I said, I haven't slept on them. They've done exactly what I've asked for them. Diversify, change things up, mix it up in the regular season, see what they can do. I'm going Bucks in six. I do think Miami's going to get two wins. I think it's going to be a tight series, but I think ultimately the Bucks are out for revenge. And I've seen teams in that instance do that, go after it. And I'm excited for this one.
All right, Seth, no pressure here.
No, it's a Brendan Jennings series. It's Bucks and six.
All right. Hell yeah. Easy money. All right, guys. The last series in our preview here is the 4-5 matchup. And, you know, at least one of these teams we didn't really see coming. I think it's safe to say we've all been kind of shocked by the Knicks. This was a fantastic season for them. We talked about Tom Thibodeau when they hired him and we worried, hey, is he the right guy for the job? And I still would say our points where we didn't come to a conclusion there, but the points we made about, you know, you've got to choose a path when you have a young team. They've chosen a path and they made the damn playoffs. So good for them. The Hawks, they made a huge splash in free agency. They got all this talent. They suffered through big time injuries all season, but now they're healthy and they're playing their best basketball since Nate McMillan took over. This is the toughest series for me to pick because I go into this, and I mean, I have loved this Knicks team this year. Just love to watch them. But the Hawks are really good, and that offense is super combustible. So BetMGM has the Hawks at plus 100 in the series, and the Knicks are minus 120. Or maybe I did that backwards.
No, it sounds right.
I'm not sure. I hope not.
It sounds right. Okay.
Yeah. You gave me a face, and you always make me
no,
worry.
No, I was just that, like,
it was
like,
more at the numbers. I just like to make the face that you gave to make you close. Worry for random things.
Well, my first question for you guys, is this series as close as it appears on paper? I mean, it's a 4-5 matchup, and if you're just judging by success this season, you could say, okay, yeah, sure, but I just don't know. I mean, the Knicks won the series against the Hawks this year. I mean, Julius Randle destroyed the Hawks this year. But I just don't know if the Knicks can score enough to hang with Atlanta. That's my biggest concern for them in this series. What about you, Mo?
I don't think the Hawks can deal with the Knicks' defense. You know, I think that's kind of the issue. You don't think the Knicks can score enough. I don't think the Hawks are going to get enough points. You give Tibbs a week to start preparing for Trae Young and Bogdan Bogdanovic and all of that. Like, he's going to come up with some stuff, and it's the playoffs. So I don't know if Trae's going to get the calls that he gets all the time. And here's the other thing, because this is what makes the series so difficult to call, though. They're both young, right? Like, I'm a big believer in experience. They're both young. This is Julius Randle's first time in the playoffs. This is RJ Barrett's first run in the playoffs. For the Hawks, Trae Young, Bogdanovic, John Collins, first time in the playoffs. They have a little more vets on there. Clint Capela has been in, Lou Williams, Danilo Gallinari. I think there's an element there where they're going to have a little bit more, but I kind of just go with the Knicks just because I trust Tibbs is going to turn this up, and the Madison Square Garden is going to be rocking with 15,000 fans. Like, they're going to be rolling. This is going to be a whole different atmosphere. This is going to be the biggest game for the Hawks, game one, just because they haven't experienced even a crowd like this.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, if we're talking about like relevant playoff experience, like I kind of think that in terms of being in those games and being productive, I think Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson have the edge there. Like, I don't think, you know, the guys you mentioned from the Hawks, you know, Gallinari, Lou Williams, especially are not exactly noted high level playoff performers relative to the regular season. Whereas, you know, certainly a guy like a more lunch pail guy like Taj Gibson is someone who has, you know, been effective, you know, relative to the regular season in the playoffs. So I even think that is not a huge edge. I mean, like, as you say, neither team has a lot of experience, but to that extent, I do think it is, you know, slight advantage Knicks.
I tend to agree with you there. And I like the Knicks a lot. I think that defense usually carries over into the playoffs, and offense sometimes can escape you, right? Especially role players like shooting and things of that nature when you get on the road. But man, I just think the playmaking that the Hawks have, it's going to matter a lot. Bogdan has been great next to Trae Young. They got DeAndre Hunter back. Clint Capela has been, I mean, he's not all NBA, but I mean, his numbers are certainly would have been all NBA in other years. I mean, he's been fantastic this season. His defense has been awesome. And I wonder if Atlanta is just playing better basketball right now. And if that can't carry them through this series, because I think from a talent perspective, it's in Atlanta's favor. Knicks have played better overall all year, but is Atlanta just, are they just playing their best basketball at the right time?
I mean,
that's the name of the game, right, Seth?
No, I mean, this year is maybe it because the season is so weird, but no, the momentum into the playoffs thing is not a thing.
Does it matter?
Generally speaking, again, this season is weird because of all the absences and the compressed schedule and, you know, teams making deals. But in general, I mean, I think it's been demonstrated that the first 20 games of a season is more predictive of the playoffs than the last 20 games. So the Hawks coming in healthier than they have been in a little bit, maybe matters some, but in terms of there being momentum, I'm not a big believer in that. I think that like really the swing part of the series, we've kind of danced around it, has been, game to game, what kind of whistle we're getting. And I'm not saying it's going to favor one team or another, but at least not explicitly, but the more physical contact that's allowed, it's pro Knicks. Like if the game is allowed to be a grind, that's a huge advantage Knicks. If it's touch fouls, that's an advantage Hawks. My guess is, and I think we've seen this.
This is another thing where having fans back is going to help the Knicks because we aren't going to get those touch whistles.
Well, I think it's going to go back and forth, I think, throughout the series. I think that's, you're just going to get, and it happens in the playoffs. Sometimes the refs feel like, okay, you know, maybe when you go through the situation and the teams complain after game one and send their clips in of this.
Before game one. In this case.
Well, yeah, we've already been complaining.
By the way, coach of the year stuff right there. Yeah, I just got to say, that is excellent. I mean, I love it. Like, let's get that narrative established
Pat Riley, Phil Jackson kind of stuff. And hey, I'm going to take the fine before we even start. But I
think he did it too early, actually. I think if that had come out like yesterday or today, I think it kind of got – now that we've had the play-in games, that kind of got forgotten a little bit.
Yeah. I also, though, think that what he was saying is fairly benign. Like, yeah, you should want the team in the biggest, you know, city on the planet to be in the playoffs. That's not a hot take.
Well, no, but we're not going to get any calls because of it. Hey, Adam Silver, find me right now.
Just tell me
how much now.
He should actually request.
I have the checkbook out.
He should ask like, I'm going to say this pretty much after every post game conference. So can you just give me the full, how much I'm just going to pay it right now, so we know, kind of deal.
Do it as one check.
Wasn't it Rasheed Wallace who there was going to be like the game by game fine for not like the dress codes? Oh, how much for the season? Like, I think that's Nate McMillan before this series.
But I think the whistles is going to matter. But I also think there's just a few things on the court too, and I want to get back to your point, Dave, about the end of the season and coming in hot. Coming in hot is good for you in terms of just having a good vibe and feeling good about everything. But it's so different with now they've game planned, you know, and this is a very kind of underrated point. This is the most time teams, you know, 3 through 6 have had to be able to game plan for a playoff opponent, you know, and this is the opportunity to really walk through things and go through details and stuff like that. And so everybody played their last game on Sunday, and some of these teams are going to be playing their first game since on Saturday. I think there's going to be even a little bit of a drop off in that from the Hawks. And then they're going to be going up against somebody that's fully scouted them. You know, the regular season can be a bit misleading because it's game to game. Who were their opponents in the last 20 games? How many of those guys were coming off of a second night off of back to back? How many times are 5 and 7 nights kind of deal? So I think that all plays into it. It's nice. You want the wins, but it doesn't really kind of make me feel like, oh, this is the hottest team. They're going to come in and they can easily drop game one.
To that point,
especially because the Knicks can defend.
Yeah.
Right.
To that point, by the way, going backwards from last game earlier, the Hawks' last couple opponents, Houston, Orlando, Washington, Indiana, Phoenix, Portland, Chicago.
So hear some playoff teams in there, though.
I mean, there were some. No, there were some, and that's fine. Fine. And everybody was playing for stuff. Some teams trying to play for the lottery. But it's the whole thing, though, just game to game, it's different. You know, and this is what we always talk about. Playoff basketball, drastically different than regular season basketball because of the game-to-game planning. And let me just ask you guys this. Who do you trust to make adjustments game-to-game more, Nate McMillan or Tom Thibodeau?
Neither guy is really amazing at it. But I think I trust Tom Thibodeau.
I think that in terms of prepping that defense for – let's put it this way. I don't think the Knicks are going to let Trae Young like reject, you know, one of his pet moves is like right to left crossover, rejecting a screen. Like everyone who is going to guard Trae is going to be well drilled that's going to happen. So they're not going to get like, oh yeah, that's his move more than about once. And there's going to be little things like that all over the court where I think that the Knicks are going to be really well prepared for.
And to just kind of point out to piggyback off Seth's point, I guarantee you everybody who's going to end up guarding Trae Young has an edit of that. Maybe not every time Trae Young's done it, but damn near.
Well, that'd be a long edit.
Damn near a lot of them, you know, and to show yeah, it would, and reinforce it, you know. So I think that's just this is part of the game planning. And I think that's what we're going to see with the Knicks.
And I do think,
go ahead.
I think that, you know, Randall is almost harder to game plan for just because so much of his, like what he's done this year has been like, what do you do with that? Like, he's just like these crazy contested step back jumpers. Like, man, it's a shot we want. Oh, we wanted him to take that shot and he just banged it on us. And, you know, Trae has some of that, but I think just by virtue of, you know, pure size of nothing else, like that's not something you can necessarily really game plan for against Randall in quite the same way as you can like a guy who is operating out of pick and roll a lot more.
But this is where it gets interesting for Randall in this sense too, because of it being different for the playoffs. He's going to see more double teams. Teams are going to have game planned literally for him in a different way. And I think that's something that's going to be interesting for him. He's been okay out of double teams, but not great. He tends to be more turnover prone when they send a second man. And, you know, how he attacks and how the Knicks offense operates off of that is going to be different. And that is their offense. Go to Julius Randle and let him kind of make everything happen. And I think that will be a very interesting thing for watching in Julius Randle's first playoff run, him experiencing like, oh, I'm actually getting the star kind of treatment in this situation now. This is completely different.
Yeah. Well, it feels like we all kind of think this is going to be a close-ish series. I think it's going to go seven, and I'm taking the Knicks because I trust the defense to come up, you know, when it matters. What about you guys?
I think Knicks, I'm trying to decide between five or six. And I'm leaning five. I think there'll be close games, but I think the Knicks end up winning. They closed out in the MSG in five.
I think it's going to be six very tight games. I think it's going to be really close. And might even just come down to a couple of tough plays at the end of the stretch in every one of these games, but I'm going Knicks in six.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is the end of the show, and normally where we're looking ahead, and hey, we're looking ahead to November because Seth's book, The Mid-Range Theory, hits bookstores November 2021. Already available for pre-order anywhere that you buy books, hopefully an independent bookseller. Seth, what do you got to say about it? How does it feel to have your book in pre-order? We're pumped. I'm very proud of you.
The couple of weeks since I finished the bulk of the writing of it, I seem to be much more relaxed. So I'm glad for that.
A little bit.
And then I'm just excited for it to come out and for people to, you know, join the conversation. I think a lot of what I wrote about is trying to explain from at least an analytic perspective how the game has developed to get where we are. I mean, obviously it's the mid-range theory is the title of the book is one of the chapters talking about the three-point revolution and kind of what has happened and why the game has changed, both from a three is greater than two standpoint, but also kind of the rule changes and the development and the skills of players, especially big men that have, that have kind of led to the game where it is today. And hopefully that can clear up some misconceptions and improve the level of the discourse around those kind of things.
You're muted. We almost made
Fantastic.
It the whole
That's the
episode.
First time I've done that.
We almost made it the whole live episode without anybody screwing that up.
And you did.
And of all the people to screw up, it had to be me. Well, that's it. Congratulations, Seth, on the book coming out. Really, really pumped and can't wait to read it. I already read that one chapter and it was fantastic. So everybody go pre-order that book now. Thanks for joining us if you were on the live stream. If you weren't and you're just listening to the audio, thanks for listening. Try to catch us on the live stream next time. It's a lot of fun. For Seth and for Mo, I'm Dave. This has been the Athletic NBA Show. This has been Nerder, She Wrote. You guys have a good weekend and enjoy the playoffs.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.